Today's learning today's shiur is sponsored by Chaim and Danielle Weider, Lila Nishmas, Sarah Yutabas, Ephraim Menachem Mendel, and by Tzuriel and Lizzie Ross, for Shlema for Shlomo Zalman Ben Freda, Besoch Shachal Yisrael. Okay, so I decided, you know, my wife and I, we always sit down before Yom Tovim and think of fun ways to engage the children in the upcoming Yom Tovim. And one of the ideas I had this year was to make our own olive oil. That was a nice thought. How hard could that be, right? I thought it's no different than taking an orange and squeezing an orange and making orange juice. So that's an easy thing to do. I have had a history of, you know, I've shared before my making of the matzah. I've tried to share that before. I'll remind you what happened that time. My brother-in-law, Ruvi, decided one year, maybe 5-6 years ago, to cut our own wheat. If you remember, we went down to Jersey. We found the farm in New Jersey. We cut our own wheat in a farm there. It was in June. That's when the wheat begins to dry. Ruvi, you know, as a big Talmid Chacham as he is, he may not be the most sophisticated in his agricultural skills. So while we came down with a pair of scissors, all the Chassidim came down with sickles. So they're busy sickling away, if that's the proper word, all the wheat. And we're like cutting and bending and cutting hours until he had a whole box full of wheat. And we went through the whole process of letting the wheat dry out, and we ground it, and we sifted it, and we kneaded it. And in the end, the matzahs got completely botched. It was chametz. And it wasn't wasted of time. At least we have some understanding of how the process works. We never did this again. But okay, that was hard. Olive oil, how hard could olive oil be? I've been to the olive presses up in Eretz Yisrael, the different places. I didn't see them actually do this, but you see these big stones. It was described to me like a donkey would like go around pulling like a big boulder of some sort. It would go around the stone mill. You put olives inside, and it would crush them. And there would be like a little drain, and the oil would seep out to the middle. So obviously I don't have my own stone mill, but I could have some, or a donkey. They're working on it though. And but I could do something similar. I could probably mash them. So I thought this is going to be a pretty easy approach to making a fun night activity during Hanukkah. So I did a little research, looked up some videos, how to make some homemade olive oil. So the first problem is there's no way you could find fresh olives. There's no place in locally I could find fresh olives. I'm still looking for fresh olives. That's the big problem, number one, to get started. Then it's not so simple. You have to pit the olives, which is a big process of removing the pits from the olives. And then you need to buy this type of sifter and that type of sifter. And I almost gave up because it was a long process, a lot of extra money just for one night activity. But then I found one video last week that you could use all things that most people have in their own house. You could still, having other than buying olives, you could use everything like a shirt to sift and a hammer to open, you know, pit the olives. You could do everything that most people have in their own home. So fine, I have the video, a 5-minute video how to do it. I still cannot find fresh olives. That's a big problem. So the process is pretty much the way you do this at home, and I'm hoping to get the next couple of days, find someplace, maybe in Queens, who knows, for fresh olives. But you pit the olives. Then you have to mash it really hard and it turns into this big paste. And then after you make this big paste and you blend it, there are little droplets of olive oil that come out. It's not significant. You have to sift it and squeeze it through a cloth and then put it through another cloth and like a cheesecloth and then another sifter. It's not as easy as I thought, but I'm still hoping by next week I could share with you the experience. But I figure maybe we'll talk a little bit about olive oil, what's considered acceptable for olive oil for Hanukkah. Does it have to be kosher? Do you have to have a hashkacha on the olive oil? Does it have to be edible, the olive oil? Could you go to Costco and just pick up whatever brand that they have? Is that good enough for the olive oil? What is, you see the different types of olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, regular virgin olive oil, pure olive oil. What's the difference between all these olive oils? What's acceptable and what's considered hider mitzvah? So that's what we're going to hopefully discuss today. So take a look now at number one. For what types of oils, what types of wicks are acceptable for Neos Chanukah? So number one, the Shulchan Aruch writes as follows. It says, Kol ha-shmanim va-psilos, all oils, all wicks are all ksheirim l'ner Chanukah. You could use all them, they're all acceptable. There's no hakpada on which types of oils, which types of wicks. They're all good enough. And then the Rama writes, however, in the Haggah, one line down there, two lines down, Umi u-shemen zayis mitzvah min ha-muvcha. The best type, the mitzvah ben amuvcha, the greatest fulfillment of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is using shemen zayis, which of course is olive oil. But the Rama writes interestingly in the next line down, v'nogin in the bowl, the practice b'medinos elo, where the Rama lived in Krakow and other areas of Poland, the common practice was lahadlik b'ner shel shayva. to use wax, to use regular candles. Ki oren tzalul kimo shemen. The wicks of the wax candles apparently produces a very nice flame. It's a beautiful flame. The truth is, we now know I use oil. My kids use candles. The candles have a much nicer flame, a sharper flame than the olive oil. You have to know what you're doing to make the olive oil flames look as pure, as pretty, as nice and big and light. But so he said the practice in Krakow, it seemed, and other areas of Poland, was to use wax. To use wax candles, that had a very nice, a pretty flame. But nonetheless, Rama writes, the mitzvah min hamuvchar is considered shemen zayis. Thank you so much, Jeff. Shemen zayis is the best. Why is shemen zayis the best? Why is it the best oil to use, the best type of flame to use? So there are two different reasons. Mishnah Berurah, if I were to ask you, you'd probably tell me the reason is because it's the Zeichel Neis. The Neis of the Shemen of Ner Chanukah was with Shemen Zayis. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah clearly writes in number two. Mikol Makom Mitzvah Bishel Shemen. Even though the Ramah writes that the practice was to use wax, the mitzvah is still with Shemen Tfei. There's more of a mitzvah to use olive oil, Mi Benero Sheshaiva, more so than that of candles made from wax. Dayadea Shemen Nasa Neis. Because we know the Neis of Chanukah took place with the oil. The oil lasted for 8 days, and that was Shemen Zayis. So to remember, as a Zeichel Neis, we should also be using the Shemen Zayis. That's the ideal. That's the hidden. Now, the Shar Tzion quotes from the Maharal Miprag that he thought that you can't use wax. He was against using wax candles. He thought that was wrong to use so. But in the end, we don't paskin like that Maharal, and we assume that wax does work. You can use candles, but still, Shemen Zayis is the best because of Zeichel Neis. Now, there's a second reason why we should be using Shemen Zayis. It sounds very similar to this first reason, but there is a difference. There's a conceptual difference from the suggestion made by Gilyon Ne'ashas, the Rav Akiva Eiger. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos the following. The Gemara says in number four, I pulled out the wrong line here, so I'm going to just edit it as I read it. The Gemara in Shabbos says in Daf Chaf Aleph, number four here, Amar Rav Huna psilos u'shmanim sh'amru chachamim, the wicks, and the oils. The Chachamim say, Ein malikin ben b'Shabbos. We know in the second parak of Masechah Shabbos, b'ben malikin, there's a whole list of which types of oils and wicks may be used and which ones may not be used. So says Rav Huna, all those wicks and oils that may not be used on Shabbos because you might come to adjust it, Ein malikin ben, I'm changing the word now, b'mikdash, in the base of Mikdash. So there are many oils listed that may be used on Shabbos, and those same oils that can't be used on Shabbos may not be used in the base of Mikdash either. Asks Gilyon Ashas, ask Rabbi Kveger. Number five, reading just the bold here again. Lemay nakit shemanim. Why does the Brice, the Gemara, say oils in the plural? How b'mikdash, there's only one type of oil that they use in the base of Mikdash. E malikin rak b'shemen zayzach. They use the purest of the olive oil, not multiple types of shemens. What's this, the Gemara saying here? So there's another reason to use shemen zayis on Chanukah. Not because of the Zeichel Neis, because the Zeicher of the Beis HaMikdash. To remember the Beis HaMikdash, and there are differences between the two. Chanukah is the one yontif we have throughout the entire year that we're actually remembering the Beis HaMikdash. Yes, Sukkot and Pesach, they're things that took place in the Beis HaMikdash. Sukkot is not a celebration of the Beis HaMikdash. Pesach is not a celebration of the Beis HaMikdash. Neither is Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. It's all a different celebration of that particular holiday. Chanukah, according to many, is a celebration of the Beis HaMikdash that we once had. Not to remember the Nes only, but also to remember the Beis HaMikdash that we once have. There's a Zeichel LeNes, and there's a Zeichel LeMikdash. And there are differences. I'll give you one difference. One difference is, do I have to have a menorah, or a chanukiah, whatever you want to call it? Do I have to have a kli to hold the candles? If the whole idea is simply to remember the Zeichel of the Shemen, the olive oil, then I don't need a kli. I just have to have olive oil. In theory, I could put the olive oil in a little cup and not have a stand with it. There's no remembrance of the Beis HaMikdash. It's just remembering that oil is being lit. But if the point is to remember what happened in the Beis HaMikdash and that there was a menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, there is room to say that's not enough to simply have cups of oil, but you have to have some type of holder, some type of menorah to remember what took place actually in the Beis HaMikdash. I have discussed this in the past. I'm not going to go through now, but there are many, many indications that Chanukah is not simply a Zeicher LeNeis, but also Zeicher LeMikdash. I'll give one more example, but you could go on a whole long list of 10 different items. There's halacha, you cannot benefit from the Neris Chanukah. I can't read a Sefer by the Chanukah, it's Aser. Why is it Aser? So the simple reason is because I can't use a mitzvah for it's a misuse of a mitzvah. It's an abuse of a mitzvah. But the Baal Mor says no, because the Neres Chanukah is Zecher LeMikdash. And just like I couldn't use the Neres of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, I can't use the Neros of my Ner Chanukah. Not because of it's a mitzvah, because it's remembering the Beis HaMikdash. And again, there's a lot more to discuss down that path. But either way, the simple understanding why Shemen Zayas is to be used in Chanukah is because it's Zecher LeNes, and also Zecher to what took place in the Beis HaMikdash. Now let me ask you the question, does that oil have to be kosher? There are many additives that they could, in theory, put in oil, olive oil. Now, if it's fresh, it's certainly kosher. I could buy fresh olives, make it in my house. That will be kosher. But let's say I buy a oil in whatever store, and it has no hashkach on it. Or let's say I know for sure they put some pig oil in it. Or bas v'chal, they mix together milk and meat. Then is that allowed? Can I use it? Does it have to be edible halachically? And does it have to be actually healthy? There are certain oils, it might be olive oil, but it may not be for human consumption. But it might be kosher still. So do I have to be able to eat it? Does it have to be kosher? You know, I have this, I tested out the other day. My wife bought, she buys big olive oil from Costco. I forget whatever the brand is. And I said this would work to light. I imagine it would work. I've never tried it. I always buy whatever they sell in the Judaica stores. But I imagine this would work. I never lit oil other than what I buy from the Neres Chanukah. So I started pouring it in. My 3-year-old daughter was very confused why I was pouring like the olive oil used for eating into the menorah. I just wanted to test it out. So I poured in the olive oil, and I lit it, and it worked. Of course it worked. I'm not a chiddush. I never did this before. I'm exploring my house a little bit. So it did light. So maybe instead of spending a lot of money in a Judaica store for a small bottle of oil, you could buy 4 times the size for half the price, and maybe that should work also. Why have to buy from the Judaica store what they probably take from Costco and put in a small little bottle? And the point here is not to like save money. I'm not trying to get that point. I'm just trying to figure out what types of oils work. So let's go through a different point. Does the olive oil have to be kosher? Do I need to get a hashgacha on this olive oil? So there is a Gemara in Shabbos Daf 6 here, Chaf Ches in number 6. Number 6, the Gemara says, I'm reading just the bold here. Lo huchsharu b'melech ha-shemayim. You're only allowed to use items from Lech HaShemayim, which is a way of saying anything having to do with mitzvahs. We're going to clarify that in just a moment. Ela'ur behema Torah bavad. This is a statement. To use for some type of mitzvah, we have to define which mitzvah. From Lech HaShemayim, you're only allowed to use or behema Torah, skin, hide, from a kosher animal. It has to be from a kosher animal. You can't use a non-kosher animal skin for some undiscussed, unknown mitzvah. Asks Gemara, which mitzvah are we talking about? Which mitzvah would you use an Or Behema Torah bilvad for? L'may Hilchas asks Gemara. I said, let's tefillin. When you're making tefillin, every part of your tefillin has to come from a kosher animal. I was Ocho, my son Yishai was bar mitzvah a year ago or so. So we went to this batimacher in Brooklyn, in Flatbush, and he showed us how, usually you just buy tefillin and it's ready. He showed us how he took the skin of the hide of the cow, and fashioned it into a box, and every part of it, you saw how it started from skin and it became a box. It doesn't go into a machine. It's a whole process involved in making this. That tefillin has to come from a kosher animal. Asks the Gemara, tefillin? We already know tefillin has to, of course, come from a kosher animal. How do we know? There's an explicit pasuk that tells us, by the mitzvah of tefillin, the man tia Torah Hashem b'ficha, that tefillin has to be to put the words of Hashem in your mouth. What does that mean? Beficha, there's a drasha. Min hamutter beficha. That which is mutter, that which is halachically allowed to be eaten, consumed. That which is kosher. Meaning, you could only use kosher animals to make the skin, to use the hair. You look at tefillin, on the top of the shalrosh, hair sticks out that's from an animal, from a cow or a calf. Has to all be from kosher animals because it says beficha min hamutter beficha. So what do we learn from the statement? Other melech hashemayim needs or behema bavad. So Gemara goes to whatever examples might be there. But what comes out clearly from this Gemara is tefillin must come from kosher animals, and seemingly all other mitzvahs must come from kosher animals as well. What other mitzvahs? What about olive oil? Does olive oil for Neres Chanukah also have to come from a kosher animal? So let me ask you this question, guys. What do you think about a shofar? Can a shofar come from a non-kosher animal? So there's a Ramah. There's a Ramah that says, based on Iran, Ramah says, you are not allowed to use a shofar from a non-kosher animal. Because the Gemara says, lo huchsharu melecha shemaim ela or behema tor bevad. That's the Ramah writes. It has to be from a kosher animal. So what about the sukkah? Can you make a sukkah from a non-kosher animal? Let's say you want to use the skin of an elephant. How do you use that for building a sukkah? What? So the walls are allowed to be makabel tumah, not the schach. The schachim, but the walls can. So the walls can be made from an elephant. So if you look at number 7 here, the Noda Behuda. The Noda Behuda, he writes, number 7, reading just the bold. He says, this concept of lo huchsharum lecha shemayim, which is learned from the pasuk v'leman tia Torah Hashem b'ficha, it's only true dafka bedavar shu Torah atma, that which is Torah itself, which I'll just clarify those points in a second. Shiyesh bo ksav, has to have writing in it. Tefillin, sefer Torah, u'mezuzah, u'batim shel tefillin, which has the shin. In other words, there are two types of mitzvahs we have. There's what's called tashmishe kedusha, and there's what's called tashmishe mitzvah. Tashmishe kedusha are mitzvahs that have psukim, shemos, names of Hashem, tefillin, mezuzah, sefer Torah. That's called tashmishe kedusha. Tashmishi mitzvah are mitzvahs that don't have writings in it. Lulav, shofar, tzitzis. They're all mitzvahs. They're called tashmishi mitzvah, but they're not kedusha. There's no names of Hashem. So one nafkamina is that, what do you do when your tefillin are worn out? Geniza. You have to put in geniza. You have to bury them. What about tzitzis? What about lulav? You don't have to bury lulav. Tashmishi mitzvah, you could just throw in the garbage. You put in a plastic bag and put in the garbage. But you can't put a tefillin in the garbage. That's for sure. You have to bury it. So Tashmishi Kedusha has a much higher standard. Tashmishi Mitzvah is a much lower standard. So it says in the Behuda, it's true of how you get rid of it when it gets worn out. But it's also true, he says, when it comes to the what it comes from, where you can make it from. So that which is Tashmishi Kedusha, Sifrei Torah, and tefillin, and mezuzahs must come from a Behema Tahora. But that which is Tashmishi Mitzvah, you could use even non-kosher animals in theory. So I have, just for example, let's say my lulav. So for my lulav, it's tashmishi mitzvah in theory. Again, there could be concerns with chatzitas, but that's actually a bad example for that reason. But let's an example of shofar. So shofar, for example. Shofar, since it's tashmishi mitzvah, I could use a non-kosher animal. It's not tashmishi kedusha. When a shofar breaks, I don't have to bury it. I could just put in the bag and throw it in the garbage. So according to this, Noda Behuda says, you're allowed to use a non-kosher animal for a shofar because it's tashmishi mitzvah. So, but wait a second, maybe shofar is different. Maybe shofar is different, why? So that's that might be specific to a ram, but he says a different reason why shofar might be a higher level. What?
You put your mouth on it. Is that like a question of eating non-kosher?
Not eating, because you can't taste it. You don't swallow it. You don't taste it. Remember what the Gemara says about shofar? That shofar is not just a stam mitzvah, just blowing shofar. Shofar is like kilifnai v'lifnim. It's like entering into the kosher kedushim. And therefore, maybe, although shofar can't come from a non-kosher animal because it's kilifnai v'lifnim, dummy, it's like going to the kosher kedushim, that's a unique type of tashmishi mitzvah. But other types of tashmishi mitzvah, says Noda Behuda, that you'd be able to use non-kosher animals. And he brings a raya. The Gemara says in Sukkah, an explicit Gemara tells us in Masechah Sukkah, that you're allowed to, it talks about a case of an elephant dies, an elephant drops dead. That's pretty big. It's going to certainly be 10 tefachim high. It's on its side now. You have certainly more than 10 tefachim. You can use that elephant as a wall. Put a schach over the elephant, use the legs that are sticking out, and that's a wall. Have a couple walls from the elephant. Ah, isn't this tashmishi mitzvah? So we see from here, it says, no, the Behuda, for tashmishi mitzvah, you're allowed to use a non-kosher animal. You don't have to use a behemoth Torah. Only by tashmishi kedusha do you require that which is kosher, and maybe shofar, because shofar has this concept of it's kilifnai vilifnim. That's his understanding. Now, the Beis Yitzchak says a reason why. So now we'll come after this. Neris Chanukah, which is tashmishi mitzvah, I would not need to have a kosher food. I could have a non-kosher oil. I could use pig oil if I wanted. I could mix it together with olive oil. But I don't have to have it kosher. Now the Beis Yitzchak, he brings another raya as to how we know that you're allowed to use non-kosher for Neres Chanukah? How does he know? So he has a fascinating, he quotes Yushalmi. Yushalmi has a discussion when it comes to a case of Sota. A woman who's a Sota now, and we know we're supposed to write on a piece of parchment, we write the Shem Hashem, and we throw that into the water, it gets mixed together, and she has to drink it. So ask the Yushalmi, that parchment, does it have to be in a kosher animal or a non-kosher animal? So Yushalmi says that Sota actually does not have to come from a kosher animal. Why not? Because he says that the only time you need kosher material for mitzvahs, if that mitzvah is going to stay intact. If I were to wear tefillin made from a non-kosher animal, that's a bizayon, it's a ganai for the mitzvah. But the sota, the parchment which gets mixed with the water, it's going to eventually, someone's going to drink it, it doesn't stay kayama, that's not going to be a bizayon of the mitzvah. So look what he writes. Look inside number 9. Look at this fascinating Beis Yitzchak, the chiddush he says. He says, number 9, reading the bold, where it says, Lafia ni yazdaiti. In my understanding, says the Beis Yitzchak, near the Gam Haran Yoda, the Ran will agree, according to what the Tosas writes, in the name of Yushalmi, Rabbi Eliezer ben Shmuel Omer, ein kosher megil sota al or behema temeya. You can't ride on a non-kosher animal. So that's according to the first bin. It has to be in a kosher animal, the sota. But comes along Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says, v'cheven dat amar l'mechika didna, lama eino kosev. Says Rabbi Shimon, since you're eventually erasing the Shem Hashem, when you put it on the parchment, you put it into the water, the Shem Hashem gets erased, it's not kayama, who cares what you write it on? It's not staying there forever, it's the lamachik, it's going to get erased eventually, so use whatever material you want, whatever animal you want.
Once you have the Shem Hashem, it's a kedusha.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But since it's not there permanently, it's only temporary, because the moment you put the parchment with the ink in that water for the sota, it's going to erase. It has to erase. The Gemara said, must erase. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
I don't understand. If you have a Shem Hashem on it, automatically it becomes something, it's Kedusha.
Right, but since
how can you erase it? It's just like you can't erase it on anything else, you can't erase it.
So that's a general question, meaning this is a special exception. When it comes to Sota, the Pasuk says it has to erase. So normally you're right. It's a deraisa to erase Hashem's name, to put it into water. The Gemara talks about a person who has Shem Hashem written on his body that goes into the water. He can't do that. He's erasing Shem Hashem. There's a special exception in the Sota. The way it works, by definition, it must be erased. So he says, since it's going to be erased eventually, the parchment lacks its real intrinsic Kedusha, and we don't care what material it's on. It's only there temporary. It's strange to put Shem Hashem on a pigskin, if you will, but according to the letter of the law, Rabbi Shimon says, since it's going to be erased, we don't care the quality, we don't care the material that's being used for the parchment. Based on this idea, says the Beis Yitzchak himself. Look down a couple more lines in the bold. Val Karchach Tzarech Lom, he writes, the Dafka Kisha Dover Kayim. The only time we require kosher animals for whatever the mitzvah is, tefillin, tefei Torah, is when that item, that chefza of the mitzvah, that object, is going to remain intact. Like tefillin, like a mezuzah, it's genai lemitzvah sheyehe al behema tmei. It's a terrible disgrace. Imagine, again, to even talk about this is strange. Imagine you have a mezuzah hanging on your door made of pigskin. That's a terrible genai for the mitzvah. Only when it's going to remain intact do we have that requirement and restriction. It can't be a behema tmei. But hecha, says the Beis Yitzchak, hecha dil mechika kaima. When that mitzvah is going to be eventually erased, like the sota, lo chashinan, you don't hang the sota things on the wall. I tell chassanim all the time, when you get married, you need a ksuba. I hope I don't insult anybody who ever has this practice, but it's not a practice I promote, or many rabbanim don't promote this. You don't hang the ksuba on the wall. You know what the ksuba says? Ksuba says, when your husband divorces you, this is how much money you owe. It's not inappropriate. So when you have the sota, you're not hanging the sota on your wall. Listen, I made it through. My wife drank the sota. Here I am. You're not celebrating that. So we're not. It's not like kayama. You take the sota, they erase the Shem Hashem, and you get rid of it. So we just throw it in the garbage. So for that, we don't care what material that the sota is going to be written on. By extension, says the Beis Yitzchak, just like that's the case when it comes to sota, when it comes to Shabbos and Chanukah candles, you could use non-kosher oil. Why? It's going to get burnt. It's burnt. I'm not leaving the olive oil all year round. I light it, and it gets burnt. It's not kayama. It's not a ganai. My pig oil is not going to remain there for the whole year, for the rest of my life. It's going to be there for 45 minutes, an hour and a half, till it burned, and that's it. And just like Sota can be on a non-kosher animal, so too he said that you could have Hanukkah candles from a non-kosher animal as well. You don't have this concept of mutter beficha. It does not apply when it comes to tefillin. Fascinating, fascinating idea of the Beis Yitzchak.
Not good for the Judaica stores, Rabbi.
Not good for Judaica, exactly. Not good for the Judaica stores.
You hang it on the wall. So the husband should see, better not divorce, because he
could
see how much something
costs them. Could be. But the truth is, the halacha is that the wife has to always know where it is, and where it should not be on the wall. It's a strange thing to hang on the wall. But those who have it, some have that such a practice, but I discourage it, as do many other rabbanim.
Hiddur mitzvah is better
not to. We'll get to hiddur mitzvah in a second. Yeah, exactly. We're talking about what works, halacha. Yeah, exactly. We'll go through. We'll have the piece with the OU, how they come out as well. But right now, the Beis Yitzchak says it does not need to be kosher. We don't apply the concept of mutter beficha. It does not apply to that which gets burned. Okay, now, the Beis Yitzchak, in another tshuva, he writes, he goes through this whole back and forth, this whole discussion, and he comes out to say that, although this is a very nice lumdus, it's a very nice svara, that Rabbi Shimon holds you could have sota and behemoth temeya, you could have a non-kosher animal, and that seemingly would apply to Hanukkah as well. Lamaisa, we don't paskin like that shita Rabbi Shimon. The Rambam writes clearly, if you look at number 10 now, the last number 10 of the last paragraph, in page number 3. Here he writes, in the last paragraph, Hine, he quotes from this Yushalmi, so look at the underline, Alzeh Kosov. We don't pass like that Yushalmi, because the Rama writes in Hilchos Sota, maybe Megillah shall or Tahor dum yud the Sefer Torah. He writes, when it comes to writing the Sota, you should write it on kosher parchment, just like a Sefer Torah. He did not embrace the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. It must be from kosher animals, like the first opinion in Yushalmi, and so too, that you don't, so there you don't have the Svar. The Mechika Svar doesn't apply. The fact that it's going to erase, we don't allow for that. So by Neres Hanukkah as well, he says, seemingly a person should not light non-kosher food, non-kosher oil would not work either. The Maisa, how do we paskin?
What about the wall for the sukkah? Is that also
king? So it's Exodus. What with the wall for the sukkah?
Where you draw the line?
How do you draw the line? So I would think the line would be drawn perhaps as follows, that when it comes to the sukkah, there's a discussion what exactly is considered the mitzvah, the chefta shel sukkah. So everybody agrees that schach is certainly the major mitzvah. But there's machlokas between the Rambam and the Rush. Do the walls also, are they considered the hechsh, the chefta shel mitzvah? Or it's simply a requirement, you need the walls, but that doesn't become the mitzvah. Because the Gemara talks about when it comes to muksa, which parts of the sukkah are considered muksa. So the Gemara says that they connect it to a hekdesh, the pasuk connects it to hekdesh. There's chalosh shem shemaim on the sukkah. There's a certain kedusha of the sukkah. So according to some, that only means a schach. But there's no kedusha to the walls. Others say, no, even the walls have some type of kedusha. So part of that discussion of where the chefza shel mitzvah of the sukkah is will help, I think, answer this question. Now, take a look at the last page. Turn to page number 4 here. This is from a sefer called Pinine Hanukkah. Pinine Hanukkah, halach l'maisa, and then we'll get to what the OU writes on this. Pinine Hanukkah, he writes, Rabbeinu Shlita, it's really Rav Yashiv, it's Rabbeinu Zetzal. Mahadir lahalik b'shem and zayis haroi lachila. He preferred to find pure oil, shem and zayis, that was edible, which meant by human consumption, and also, of course, kosher. V'osoi b'kvisha kara, that was made cold-pressed. The different types of presses of the oil. So cold-press is simply what I described in the beginning. You just press the oil, you know, have that stone go around, or my house, I could mash it, see how that goes. Very simple, no refinement, no chemical reactions, just pressing the olives to produce and to generate the olive oil. That was the hakpada of Rav Yashiv. V'id gish Rabbeinu, and Rav Yashiv was very, very very careful in emphasizing, kol ha-nidon bazeh hurak l'hidr, as you said. This whole discussion is only l'hidr mitzvah. Do you want the most hidr? Hanukkah is a great time to look for hidrs. It's mahajim min ha-mahajim. If you can find the hidr, great. About min hadin, according to the letter of the law, the halacha, hakol kasher, anything you use is completely fine. Sharei, as we saw in the beginning, the Shulchan Aruch writes, kol hashemanim k'shem l'ner Chanukah. All types of oils are permissible. Miu shemen zayis mitzvah min ha-mufcher. But shemen zayis is the best, but that's a hider. Because as we saw, this was a nace took place with the Shemen Zayas. Well, hider zeh tzarich shei roi l'achila and lo mevushel. So the idea of hider is have it edible and also not cooked, rather cold pressed. That's the idea. Before I get to one limitation about all oils being usable is you can't use bas b'chalav. That's the only exception. Now, why you can't use bas b'chalav? The reason is as follows. Because it's brought down by the Shari Tshuva on Shulchan Aruch. He says that because I'm not allowed to get hana from bas b'chalav. I can get hana from pig. I may not want to, but I can. I get hana from pig. I can't get hana from bas b'chalav. You have to write... Exactly what? Let's say I want to wear pigskin, play football. How do you define hana? But yeah, I get hana playing football. I used to, at least I guess. But it's mitzvah lehenos nu. That's part of it. But they say, since there's a requirement to burn bas b'chalav to get rid of it, therefore it lacks the shear. Since you have to burn it, k'tusei katzmich shear exactly. Since you have to burn it, you need a shear. I need a certain amount of shear of oil. It has to be a half an hour at least to last. If that is not called halachically a shear, because I have to get rid of that bas b'chalav, therefore it doesn't qualify for the shear. But that's a discussion. That's one limitation of what doesn't work. Outside bas b'chalav, any oil, any candle, any wick, all works. Our whole discussion is you want to get mitzvah in a mufchar, mahajim in mahajim, find olive oil that has been cold pressed and not mixed with any chemicals. That's certainly the best. Yeah, sorry. Well, I think most people, when you buy the olive oil, if you buy the containers from the Judaica stores, I don't know if it comes with a hashgacha. I never saw a hashgacha. I don't think anybody would consume that.
No, you're talking about olive oil that is 100% olive oil.
Right.
But we're talking about an oil that is mixed with something which might be non-kosher. Why aren't we afraid that you might go ahead and eat it?
I mean,
use it for salad or whatever.
You're saying if I buy for my house to use for olive oil for Ner's Hanukkah, might I also end up eating it as well? So that could be a concern, but we're not in the parsha of making... Yeah. No, I'm saying we just said it doesn't need a shkafa.
I'm saying any oil that you're going to use for any food like that, it needs to have a shkafa.
No.
So even though you bought this Hanukkah oil, you're going to look at it.
Right, you're saying, but he said once it bring anything non-kosher in the house, could always be tricky. Mm-hmm. Non-kosher edible food, it could be a tricky thing.
Yeah.
If it wasn't edible, okay, fine. For my oil, for my candle, I won't eat it. It's a concern, but we don't make new gzeres that didn't exist. We can't make now. So let's go through, yeah.
So you mentioned before, so if it's not a kedusha liquor, then you can throw it out, right? Am I correct? I thought I heard that the leftover oils, you should not throw out. And I always make myself crazy, like a little bit left from the night before, the pour into the next. Is there any not to throw that out?
Yeah. There's that. The riff brings down such an opinion that any of the moser shemen, leftover oil that are in the menorah, not in the container, but in the oil, the menorah itself, that since it was set aside for the mitzvah, a person should just burn it out. That's true, that does exist.
So that's an exception to the...
Yeah.
That
yeah.
You can't get rid of the
condition. I don't think it's a requirement. I believe it's ideal because it doesn't want you to use it for a non-mitzvah purpose, but I think just as easily you could throw it in the garbage if you wanted as well.
Okay.
Just a way of getting rid of it. But the practice is not to. The practice is to burn it out.
Lulav as well.
You don't have to burn it. Lulav, the idea is once you use it for one mitzvah, we say use it for another mitzvah.
Right.
So lulav,
right.
In theory, I could put it in the garbage. This year, my lulav I left in the side. It got terribly moldy. My wife says, we're not leaving this for another year.
Yeah, right.
So we threw it in the garbage. It's allowed. But if it doesn't get moldy, so you could throw it in the chametz to burn the chametz because it's to use for another mitzvah. But mikra din midini geniza, you could put it in the bag and just throw it in the garbage. So that's the kodesh. That's a part of another discussion of how literally we take that kodesh. There might be an element, again, that's part of the question of how much is it like the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash was certainly Kaddush. So how far do we extend that to ours? So that's part of another discussion. I guess we could do that next year. Next Sunday is probably not going to be sure. But Enochanami, that's part of the conversation of how...
What do you do with your leftover oil?
I burn it out.
What does that mean?
I put in a candle when Chanukah was over. I put it and light it until the oil burns out.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's hard to get out of the little house.
You do the best you can. Yeah, don't be. We're not Malachi Sharis. You do the best you can.
What, should you save the wicks? You said burn
the wicks? No, yeah, the wicks are usually burnt. Anyways, I just put it in the garbage and throw it out at that point.
Fire department gets very upset.
Not sure. Yeah, sure. Yes. No. I'm not sure the practice of it. But let's finish. We have a few minutes. Let's finish up, guys. Let's just get to the end. Last piece here. So the just reading from the OU, just to have different terms of those who want to buy their own olive oil. Let's say they want to. So they have extra virgin olive oil, and then there's a pure olive oil and refined olive. What does it all mean? So
refined diamonds.
Yes, I've never done that before. So here we go. You ready? Extra virgin olive oil and virgin olive oil production begins by transforming the olive fruit into olive paste by crushing the olive, which I'll hopefully be doing this week, Amir Tashem. The microscopic oil droplets concentrate and separate from the olive solids without chemical treatment. That's what it means. You crushed it, you pressed it, and you've produced little droplets of olive oil. The difference between extra virgin and virgin is only in the acidic level of the oil. Extra virgin oil has less than 0.8% free fatty acid, and virgin oil can have up to 2%. Why one have more acid than the other, I don't know exactly, but it's a question of acidic level. They're both completely fine in terms of olive oil that can be used for Hanukkah. Then he says pure olive oil, if you ever see that on a brand, it simply means that it was refined olive oil mixed with virgin olive oil. And refined olive oil, what's refined? That they went through some refinement, some chemical process. It wasn't cold pressed. They may have cooked it, they baked it, they did something to it. So refined olive oil would not. So if you want to accomplish the hiddur mitzvah that we're describing here, refined olive oil wouldn't qualify, seemingly, and nor would pure olive oil. But extra virgin or just plain old virgin olive oil, those would work as well. Bottom line here, ruling, they say, is the opinion of the most poskim regarding their Hanukkah, that even refined oil that does not have a hechsher is acceptable, because as we say, Ner Hanukkah could come from anything, it doesn't need to be kosher. But those who want to be mahadir for the mitzvah, they should go for dafka, the extra virgin or virgin olive oil. He said, in conclusion, right, any extra virgin or virgin olive oil purchased at any major food supplier or produced by any major brand has no fear of adulteration and may be consumed. Meaning you don't need hashkacha. When you go to a store, he says, when you go to the store and you find extra virgin olive oil or virgin olive oil, it does not require hashkacha. Because based on the FDA, it's completely pure, doesn't require hashgacha, and therefore for consumption, also for the use of the hiddur, it works. But he says the OU, however, encourages consumers to purchase extra virgin or virgin olive oil with a reputable hechsher or from a well-known brand to negate all concern, because there is still some concern. My wife is telling me that her brothers are very machbin in halacha, more than I could ever imagine. But she says, she remembers her brothers talking about that even this was not good enough because they have concerns of, like, they put some additives. They buy their oil from someplace in Italy. They're thinking about saving money. They're not saving money. They should maybe. But they're making very expensive olive oil from Italy where it's known to be 100% pure, no additives or nothing. That is the highest level of the Shemen Zayis Zach. Okay, we'll stop here.